You're listening to the Mets Blog Q&A Cast, presented by Citi, your podcast for one-on-one Mets conversations.
What's up, Mets fans? I'm Matt Cerrone. Thanks for listening to the Mets Blog Q&A Cast, presented by Citi. Mets home runs go a lot further than you think. For every Mets home run hit at Citi Field this season, Citi will donate $2,000 to No Kid Hungry to help fight childhood hunger. Every dollar donated provides 10 healthy meals for kids. Last season, the Citi Community Home Runs program raised over $170,000. To learn more about it, go to Mets.com/Citi. Today I'm talking with veteran broadcaster, radio host, and Mets fan Sid Rosenberg, who did a great job at WFAN for so many years, and he's now back in New York, where he co-hosts the Bernie and Sid show with Bernard McGurk for WABC 770 AM. He's also recently launched a sports podcast for them, aptly named Sid on Sports, which you can find on WABCradio.com. But before I get to Sid, a real quick programming note, be sure to check out all of SNY.TV's original podcasts. We cover the Mets, the Jets, the Giants, the Knicks, the Rangers, the Islanders. You could do it by subscribing to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. That's the SNY.TV audio network, which also now has a Giants goal line, which is an awesome show. It's new. They do a terrific job. It's a podcast about the football Giants hosted by our NFL insider, Ralph Bacchiano. He's awesome. Obviously, a ton of years covering the team, and he does a terrific job on the podcast, which we just launched. So definitely check that out. Again, SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. It's good stuff, so check it out. And with that, here's my talk about the Mets, Doc Gooden, radio, and more with WABC Midday host Sid Rosenberg. So I guess the best place to start is tell me just a little bit about the Sid on Sports and the podcast and why you, because, you know, the show you're doing in the morning with Bernie is more politics, more right. culture. But, you know, why did you want to kind of get back into doing, obviously sports is in your DNA. Tell me about, you know, the decision to kind of do the podcast and what you're hoping to do with it.
Well, I'll tell you what, Matt. Like you said, look, certainly I have a lengthy career in sports, dating back to my days at WFAN, the industry standard up here in New York, and filling in, by the way, for a full 2 months, just two summers ago. So I'm not that far removed from WFAN. Three sports shows over the past decade down in Miami. I never lost my zest and my passion for sports, but admittedly, a couple of years ago, when I did that summer at WFAN, I said this in my podcast, yelling and screaming about Eli Manning and Carmelo Anthony all day long, every day, was a bit much for me. You know, listen, God willing, I'll be 50 years old in April. I've got two kids, 1-7, 1-12, and all of a sudden, news, politics, that stuff has become every bit of passion for me, and certainly more important than if Seth Lugo beats the Cardinals tonight. So, make a long story short, I started to employ about 2 years ago more politics and news into my South Florida morning show. I started bringing on guys like Chuck Todd, meet the press moderator on a weekly basis. And what that did basically was get me this position up here at WABC, the biggest political station in the country, and got me back to New York City. But at no point did I ever lose my passion for sports. Even since I've been back to New York, I've done a couple of series on SNY. I just did a top 10 list that's being aired now on NFL Network. I've actually hosted alongside Andy Adler about four or five Yankee pregame shows locally on Channel 11 WPIX here in New York. So the sports is still there, and I want to do as much sports as possible, but certainly politics and news have caught up to sports at this point in my life.
I was listening to the show the other day, and you were talking about Doc Gooden, and you mentioned how you would text him, you know, when the new that those rumors came out and everything. I mean, what? Tell me just a little bit about your relationship with him. I obviously, you guys have the relationship where you would feel comfortable checking in on him. I mean, what do you make of the situation that's going on with him? Are you concerned?
Yeah, I mean, of course I'm concerned. Like you and everybody else, I saw the cover of the New York Daily News and it looked horrible. I know Strawberry's comments as well, although it's funny because I know that Gooden and Strawberry haven't liked each other for decades at all.
And of all
people to be out there trying to help Dwight, it seems somewhat disingenuous that it's coming from Daryl. Here's the relationship I've got with Gooden, okay? I don't call him Doc. I call him Dwight. The first time I texted him, I said, listen, Lawrence Taylor is a very good friend of mine also, okay? But Lawrence Taylor left LT behind many, many years ago. His friends now, we call him Lawrence. We don't call him LT. That was his persona with the Giants. That was the earring and the quarterback sacker. Same thing with Doc. You know, he's Dwight now. And he and I have had a lot of conversations, a lot about recovery, about addiction, those types of things. I know that when I filled in at WFAN just a couple of summers ago, my first show back, I had Gooden on, and he and I talked about the Mets and the young players and the promise for the future, but we also spent time talking about addiction and recovery right on WFAN. There have been times that people don't know about that I'll text him, hey Dwight, how you doing? Sid, I'm doing okay. Came to my anniversary party down in Florida a couple of years ago. We did a book signing together and a jersey signing together in Coral Springs about 3 years ago. So I see Dwight. I talked to Dwight. Admittedly, he had not been getting back to me the last couple of months, which I found very concerning. When I came up to WABC, I wanted to get him on right away, even though we're not a sports station. He's a New York guy. People love him here. I thought it would be cool to hear from Dwight Gooden on WABC. He did not answer my text, something he never did for years, Matt. And that kind of raised an eyebrow. So when I saw this story, I was not all that surprised, even though Dwight denies it. Sunday morning, for example, I texted Dwight. When I first became aware of this story, I knew it was coming out Monday. I found out on Saturday. I texted Dwight 9 a.m. Sunday morning, and I said, listen, as you know, you can talk to me about anything. I'm here. And all he said back to me was, there's the truth. Sid, everything is okay. Sid, everything is okay. That was Sunday morning. And, of course, Monday was the big story in the New York Daily News. So he told me everything's okay. He's told everybody else that's the case. Do I believe it? Not necessarily.
He's such a, at least in my interactions with him, incredibly sweet and generous and very observational. I always love that, you know, he pays attention, I think, more than maybe people want to give him credit for. And I miss hearing from him. And so, like, if for no other reason than I would like to hope everything is good for him, because just as a Mets fan, you know, his insights and obviously the legacy that he has, as short as it was, is so powerful. So.
Well, I mean,
I wish him the best.
And above and beyond that, Matt, there's no question that his Met legacy was great. You know, he won a World Series. He had great years with the Mets. There's no question about that. But me being an admitted recovering addict, the fact is that although we don't like to believe as a father, I don't allow my son to have sports figures as his heroes. I just don't allow it. But it does happen. You know, like Charles Barkley said, sure. It just does happen. And Gooden was able to reach a lot of people who were not just Met fans, but people who said, hey, look at this guy. This guy had everything. This guy had it all. And he literally blew it. He blew it. And here he is now, years later, being welcomed back by his former teammates, welcomed back as an ambassador for the Mets, by his organization, by his city. And there's a lot of addicts out there who said, hey, if he can do this, I can do this. So on a much more important level than even the Mets in baseball, if in fact all this is true, and Dwight has relapsed or has been relapsing for quite some time. Unfortunately, that's part of the sickness. People do relapse, but it also does disappoint some people, and that would be a lot more disappointing than the baseball fans.
Right, of course. How did you become a Mets fan?
You know what, my father, that's a good question. My grandfather was a Brooklyn Dodger fan.
Okay.
My grandpa Meyer, Brooklyn Dodger fan. So my dad was a Brooklyn Dodger fan. And of course, everybody knows that after 1957, New York went from three baseball teams to one. And the people that loved the Dodgers in Brooklyn and the Giants hated the Yankees. And my grandfather and my dad were two of those people as Brooklyn Dodger fans. So they refused to root for the Yankees when the other two clubs left in 57. And they were very enthusiastic when, in fact, a baseball team wearing the blue of the Dodgers and the orange of the Giants arrived in 1962. So my dad was a Met fan, and that's how I became a Met fan, obviously. And my first baseball memory was 1973. I was 6 years old. My dad would take me to his barber, Joe, on Avenue U in Brooklyn every single week, and he'd get his nails done, his hair done. And I distinctly remember sitting in the chair, getting my hair cut at 6 years old. There were these three fat guys, straight out of the movies, by the way, Matt. Three fat guys in the back. They had a transistor radio back then, and they were listening to the World Series. It was the Mets and the A's. Vida Blue was pitching. Wayne Garrett was at the plate for the Mets. 6 years old, Mets A's World Series, Blue against Garrett. That was my first memory of baseball, and loved the Mets ever since.
That's awesome. I could totally, that's great. I could see it. It's awesome. The transition to politics, you mentioned it earlier, to, you know, those sorts of issues, is that something you always, you know, like, for instance, if you and I were grabbing a beer together, we were out somewhere, believe me, I'd be far more likely to talk about the election and all those things as well, but yet my career is in sports, so I understand sort of how that goes. Were you the same way, you know, 10 years ago, whatever? I mean, were you talking about this stuff before, or is it something that you've kind of gotten more into and more comfortable with?
Great question. And no, I was not talking about this stuff before. I was a sports junkie, and that was it. I wasn't into politics at all. I did vote, but I wasn't aware of what was going on, why I was voting for the guy I was voting for, any of that. So I really wasn't. I think, you know, what happened to me was Imus. And I was at WFAN, and I hosted the midday show with Jody McDonald, which was great. And I hosted the midday show with Joe Beningo, which was great. And I did the Giants, the pregame show, which was great. And I think along the way, the thing that certainly had the most influence on me and the highlight of my career was Imus. You know, sure. I was just doing updates in the beginning, and eventually, you know, that job evolved into something bigger for me. Now, listen, there were great guys before me who did sports on Imus. Mike Breen, for example, was great. Francesco was there. Russo was there. Ian Eagle was there. Patrick McEnroe. Some of the great sports names in the last couple of decades, at some point or another, did some type of sports report on Imus. But my job became a four-hour-a-day job. I wasn't doing just sports. Eventually, my role evolved into a full cast member with Imus.
Yep.
And I remember, this is true, when I went to rehab in 2005 and left Imus, and the fan was kind enough to bring me back after those 30 days, that some of the get-well letters I got when I was in rehab in 2005, it wasn't from Nick players. It wasn't from Ranger players or Met players. It was from Orrin Hatch from Utah, a politician. It was from Giuliani. All these politicians that loved and appreciated my quote-unquote role on Imus, those were the guys that were reaching out to me. And then, you know, meeting all these guys, I met congressmen, I met senators, I met all these types of folks. And then I actually had the pleasure of meeting George Bush, 41, the dad, who sat with me in Imus's office, said to me that he and his wife, Barbara, loved me. I was their favorite on the show. Mm-hmm. His daughter-in-law, George Bush's wife, 43, I was her favorite too. And he actually gave me a set of his presidential cufflinks when he left that day. So right then and there, I started to really get into it, listening to the interviews on Imus, meeting these folks, meeting the Tim Russerts and the Tom Brokaws and these types of people. And really since those days with Imus, I would say the past 10 to 15 years is when politics became an interest. And over the past 5 or 6 years, with my kids getting older, it's become an absolute passion.
That's great. Again, I'm talking with Sid Rosenberg. He co-hosts the Bernie and Sid Show and does a sports podcast, Sid on Sports, which you can learn more about at WABCradio.com. You can find him on Twitter at Sid Rosenberg. You know, first of all, politics aside, getting to get a gift like that from Bush Senior. I mean, what an amazing man he is. That's awesome. That's a great story. As far as politics and sports go,
the best part of that story was I sat in Imus's office for a good 30 minutes with Bush 41, and we didn't talk about. Here's one quick funny story. If you remember my role on Imus, Imus used to kick the crap out of me every single day. That was the job. And my parents would cringe, and my wife would cringe back at home watching the show. So I actually met President Bush, 41, during the Republican National Convention, which was held in New York in Madison Square Garden back in 2004. His son was here, obviously. And I said to President Bush, he kept telling me how funny I was on Imus. And I go, I mean, you got to understand, my father, he doesn't think it's all that funny. And his exact quote to me was, how do you think I feel? All the jokes about his son. Yeah. But we sat in Imus's office for 30 minutes. We didn't discuss politics or the RNC. We weren't talking about John McCain or Saxby Chambliss. We spent 30 minutes talking about all the Texas sports, the Texas Rangers, the Houston Astros, the Houston Texans, even Rice University. But back then, they had good quarterbacks at Texas Tech. He's such a huge sports fan, President Bush, 41, that he just wanted to talk sports with me, and I'm his office. That's what we did for 30 minutes.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised at that, because he probably doesn't have that outlet. So to have that opportunity to kind of riff like that with somebody who knows, that's really cool.
They did own the Texas Rangers.
Yeah, that's
for a while,
true too.
So, yeah.
Talk to me about the from a hosting, from a media point of view, what is the similarities? Because I see plenty, but I'm curious what you think. The similarities between the way we cover sports and the way we cover politics.
Oh, it's the same thing. I mean, listen, you'll have fans that are angry, Met fans usually, and I would certainly categorize Donald Trump supporters as angry. You've got fans that are delusional, fans that think their team is always going to win no matter what. Those are Donald Trump supporters. You've got fans. I'm not going to kill Donald Trump here. I mean, Hillary Clinton, too. I think they're both awful, lousy candidates. Of course, you have to pick one unless you waste your time and vote for Gary Johnson or stay home. But I think they're both lousy candidates. Let me make that point right off the bat. But the point is that the fans, at least, are the same. They get angry, they yell, they scream, they point out what's good about their team and or their candidate. They are quick to attack what they don't like about the other team. Mets and Yankees, for example. You know, having a conversation about Trump and Clinton is no different than a Met and Yankee fan yelling at each other, you know. So it's exactly the same, and the media does the same. The media has their biases in New York when they cover certain teams, obviously, and there's a tremendous amount of media bias in this election, mostly in defense of Donald Trump directed at him. So there's passion, there is delusion, there is anger, there is hope, all the things that go into a sports fan's feeling about his or her team is exactly the same thing I get. When I took phone calls on FAN, whether we were talking about Eli Manning, Carmelo Anthony, the Mets, the Knicks, it didn't matter. It's the same phone call when it comes to Trump and Clinton, except the name is different, and instead of sports, it's politics.
It's great. So before I let you go, well, it's interesting. When I was setting up Mets Blog and I was writing, you know, this was 10, 15 years ago, I took my cue a lot from political blogs, you know, things that they were doing on those sites that I wasn't seeing on sports sites. But as a fan of politics and a fan of political coverage,
right,
it was obvious to me that these styles and tactics and strategies and things.
Listen, I'll give you an example. About a month ago, Matt, I tweeted the Mets are done. Now, look, I understand they're only one back of the Pirates, three back of Miami. They're only 4.5 back of the Cardinals and 5 of the Giants for those wild card spots. But I tweeted a month ago they were done, and I still think they're done. They're done. It's not the same team as last year. The young pitching is either hurt, i.e. Matt Harvey, or not as good, i.e. Jacob DeGrom. They're not going to make it. So when I tweeted that a month ago, I got a lot of very angry Met fans going, "You're nuts." and so when I tweet that Donald Trump is not going to win because the Electoral College doesn't work well for him. I mean, she wakes up with 240 in her sleep, basically, and he's not doing well enough in the swing states and, quite frankly, has not exactly ingratiated himself with some of the minorities. So when I say the election is over, and I get the same exact thing. So whether it's the fans or the voters out there, they are so wrapped up in their team and or candidate that oftentimes they don't care about facts, they don't care about history, they don't care about numbers. You know, when Donald Trump was winning, for example, those polls were great. They were great polls. Now he's getting his ass kicked in the same exact polls by Hillary, and now those polls are rigged, or they're bored, or whatever. It's just complete nonsense. So I'm dealing with the same exact biases when it comes to the election here at WABC that I dealt with the sports fans at WFAN.
It's fascinating. Listen, before I let you go, just to continue on with the Mets stuff, because obviously that's the point of this show. What you felt they were done then. I'm going to guess that you feel that way now. But my larger question to you is this: if they don't make the playoffs this year, and you know, do you feel like the window will be closing, right? The Fab Five pitchers, three of them are on the DL. They're not all. They haven't been effective. Next year, you're hoping again. Now we're back to that hope of being a Mets fan. Just from where you are as a Mets fan, do you feel like if it didn't happen this year and they couldn't pull it off last year, are we now in sort of a backslide, or do you still have hope for the future?
Well, there's always hope when you have young pitching. I know they're beat up, like you said. Matt just comes off the injury. Matt Harvey's out for the year. Wheeler has had the setback. He hasn't pitched in 2 years. So, I mean, obviously, that's not good. It may be good for the Mets because some of these guys will lose some of their value, right? And all of a sudden, they're not going to be nearly as attractive on the open market. And maybe some of these guys, like Matt Harvey, for example, I thought was gone. I still think he's going to be gone, but he may, in fact, now stay with the Mets at a lower price because of the injury than signing a monster deal someplace else. So believe it or not, the Mets fans that were worried, and they should be, that only two or three of these guys would be here in a couple of years, they couldn't keep all five, maybe some of these injuries bode well for the Mets in terms of keeping these guys here in New York. And when you've got young pitching, you've always got hope. I mean, the everyday lineup, there's not a lot of young talent in that, right? I mean, Cespedes has a 3-year deal, but he may opt out this year. He's got that opportunity. He can opt out after 1 year. So his future with the Mets is certainly in doubt. David Wright's done. So Lucas Duda comes off. He'll miss the whole year. So when I look at the team, the young pitching is always something you can be excited about. And maybe, again, some of these injuries will give the Mets an opportunity to retain some of these guys. But I don't look at this club anymore as I did a year ago and go, these guys for the next 3 to 5 years could be a dynasty. I just don't see that.
What could have been? It's such a sport, right?
I mean, listen, I thought the Mets, after 86, would win five World Series. And the fact they only got back once to the NLCS and lost to the Dodgers in 88. If that team couldn't get it done, I'm not about to predict this team big things for this club.
Well, listen, man, I love your work. Keep it up. Thanks for spending some time with us here today. Appreciate it, and keep in touch.
I love your work too, Matt Cerrone. Thank you so much, and I read your blog every day. It's great. Thank you, pal.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I'll be in touch. Thanks again.
Thank you.
All right. Again, that was Sid Rosenberg, co-host of the Bernie and Sid Show on WABC Radio. Also, check out his podcast, Sid on Sports, at WABCRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Mets Blog Q&A cast presented by Citi. Citi card members receive up to $10 off per ticket with this Citi perk when they use their Citi card to purchase tickets for Sunday Mets home games. To learn more about it and to purchase tickets, go to Mets.com/Citi. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back again with another Q&A cast next week. And as always, let's go Mets.
This has been the Mets Blog Q&A cast presented by Citi, part of the SNY.TV audio network.